I'd like to welcome you all to the 12th Planets podcast at the Imbigam Bookstore here on Little Lonsdale Street in Melbourne on a rainy day. This is a gorgeous bookstore which I didn't know existed. My name is Ian Mond. I should have probably mentioned that, shouldn't I? But it is a massive bookstore and a beautiful one, and I'm glad that Elisa organised this because I would never have known this place existed, and now I can spend hundreds and thousands of dollars and go to the poorhouse. So that's a plus out of this event. But yes, as I was saying before, my name is Ian Mond. It's a pleasure to be doing this today. So thank you for all attending. And that's it. We're done. So that was a bit of humour for the... Just trying to relax you all because you all look a bit nervous, especially you, Kirsten. What I thought we would do, because there is actually 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7... There's 10 people sitting around me who are part of this. So I thought what we would do first is we would introduce everyone. So I was hoping to start with you, Karen, if you could both A, introduce who you are, and B, the book that you have written for, or for some of you are writing for this 12th Planet series, and yes, what it means to you. Well, actually, you don't have to do the last bit, just the first two bits.
My name's Karen Warren, and my book is called Through Splintered Walls, inspired by the Australian landscape.
My name's Rosaline Love. But I don't think I have a title for my book yet. But one of the stories has the title The Slut and the Universe.
My name's Deborah Biancotti and I've written a book called Bad Power.
My name's Deborah Kalin and I don't have a title for my book yet. And in fact, I don't have any stories for my book yet either. But it'll all come together, I'm sure.
Margot Lanigan. My book is called Cracklescape and it's got four stories, all with Australian settings.
I'm Kirsten McDermott and the working title for my book is Caution Contains Small Parts, which is the name of one of the stories inside.
My name is Tansy Rayner Roberts and my book is Love and Roman Punk, which is stories in England, in ancient Rome and in Australia, all with a very Roman, ancient Roman theme.
My name's Narelle M. Harris. The M's to make me look classy. Always fails, but there you go. My book is called Showtime, and it ended up being kind of a full of stories about domestic horror, I think is the best way we've come to describe that. So ordinary lives being horrific.
I'm Lucy Sussex. My book's called Thief of Lives. It contains one Australian crime story, one Australian sexy story, one vampire story set in Bristol, England, and one story set in ancient Babylon.
So, Lucy, if you could give the microphone to Elisa here. Now, Elisa, there are three people who I assume, because we've got four books that we haven't mentioned because they're not here. So do you remember what they are? Three?
The first book was Nightsiders by Sue Isle, which is what a post-climate change apocalyptic Perth. Cat Sparks is doing also a post-apocalyptic series. Thorea Dyer's the next book to come out after Margot's, which is going to be called Asymmetry. And I'm not sure what it's really about.
Because you haven't read it?
Because there are five and I'm going to eliminate one. I haven't decided which one yet.
I was going to ask you the first question, Elisa, as the publisher and editor of this series. And the question I was going to ask is why? Why the 12th Planets? Why do this series in the first place?
Why not?
Yeah, okay, no, good. I mean...
Because I love Australian fiction and I think we have great depth and breadth in Australia, what we're working on and what we're writing, and I think we have a really unique voice, and I wanted to showcase in a dramatic way 12 fantastic Australian writers to the world.
That's a really good answer. okay, well, I was wondering, we've only got a limited amount of microphones, so feel free to steal microphones off people to answer the question, because I'd rather not just go into sequential order, so if you can all be kind to each other. I suppose the question is really, in approaching this project and being asked by Elisa to write for the series, well, how have you approached it? Have you tried to look at the gender side of things, and I know not all of you have started, or some of you even still thinking about what you'll be doing. But have you thought about looking at the gender side of things, or have you tried something new in terms of your own? Because these are short collections; they're only four or five stories. Basically, how are you approaching it, or has Elisa just told you what to write? Because that's always a possibility.
No, Elisa was very free with this. She just said, you know, whatever you choose to do, it can be themed or it can be an assortment of stories. And I decided that I was going to do all Australian settings because I very rarely do use Australian settings, and I thought that if this was going to be a showcase of Australian writers, then I wanted my stories to be particularly Australian.
With Love and Roman Punk, I like to see it as this is my recovery vehicle after doing a PhD in classics, because this is where I got to take all the history that I'd played with as an academic, and I got to chuck out the footnotes and add vampires and, you know, get rid of all that academic rigor stuff and put fun dialogue in. So by taking something that I loved and exploring that further, I was able to use the four stories to sort of work through some of my issues, which led to a thematically connected collection, which was awesome. But, yeah, it was just picking one of my obsessions and letting that be something to grow the stories out of. So it was a really nice opportunity to do that, because you rarely get to publish stories all at the same time and know they're going to be collected. So
I must admit, when Elisa approached me and asked me to submit, I was terribly, terribly excited and remain terribly, terribly excited to have been asked to be part of this collection, and to hear Elisa say that, you know, that I'm sitting here amongst these extraordinary writers still makes me very, very excited. With my stuff, I guess in recent years, particularly since my first novel, what I'm increasingly exploring as a writer is people's secret lives and what's going on in the underestimated people. It tends to be in my work that a lot of people who are underestimated happen to be women, but not always, because I have male characters who are often mistaken for being weaker than they are or whatever. So I'm really interested in the elements of being human, of ordinary people in their ordinariness having something extraordinary happen, or them responding to that in a particular way. So I have three of the stories are set in Australia, only one of them is basically set in a kitchen, so it could really be anywhere. And one of them set in Hungary, and I'd actually been to Hungary for a holiday and was inspired by that nation's history and its very tragic past with World War II, with communism, and now as it was emerging at that time from all of its... from that and rejoining Europe, and things have gone a bit to hell from the global financial crisis since then. But, you know, ordinary people dealing with these extraordinary situations and the underestimated turning around and biting somebody on the arse. So, yeah.
Karen?
It was just such an incredible opportunity to be able to write four stories of my own theme and of my own length, really. Like, quite often when you get to a certain level of writing, you're asked to write stories for particular anthologies or with particular market, whereas this really was so broad and just gave us the freedom to write these stories we've probably been wanting to write for a decade or so. And so that was an amazing thing.
And you felt that you couldn't write them previously because you just haven't had the opportunity?
Could do it for my own self, but really my time is quite often taken up writing for specific anthologies at the moment.
Yeah,
so it was really good to have the chance to know, as Narelle just said, to know it was going to be a sale, so therefore it was real work, not just stuff that I was doing, you know, in my spare time. And at the same time, I had just returned from, I'd spent 3 years in Fiji and was so overwhelmed by the Australian landscape when I came back that I knew absolutely that was going to be my theme, seeing it anew and seeing the darkness of it and the glory of it and the beauty and the mysteries and... So it was a very good timing for me.
I am interested in hearing someone like yourself, Ms. Kalen, as you haven't actually written anything yet where you would be thinking of going, is putting you on the spot.
It is a little. I actually came to 12 Planets accidentally, as it were. When I came, it was full. And so I happened to just submit a story that I'd written to Elisa, it was a very difficult story for me to write, and it was a very difficult length, and finding a market that would take this story, which is basically, it relies on you knowing nothing, because it's one of these stories where it doesn't want to be explained, basically. And so markets, particularly, say, in the States for that sort of story, are very limited. And 12 Planets Press looked perfect, but I only had a short story, not a novella. And so I sent it to Elisa thinking, I'm screwed, there's nothing she can do in this, you know. And she ended up coming back to me and saying, write three more and I'll put you in 12 planets. And so then I had to approach it thinking, do I want it to be thematically linked? Do I want it to just be four stories that I pull out of my head? I tend not to plan my stories. So I do have a thematic link in mind at the moment, which is that your fate, and by fate I mean your death, is dictated by your personality type. So, but we'll see what the other three stories turn out to be once I've written them, whether that thematic link actually holds up.
Well, that's exciting. Yeah, thank you for telling us that, Rosaline. Sorry.
I'm interested to have read already some of the books in the series and to find they do have a thematic link. I was totally unable to have a thematic link, but I had enormous pleasure in writing my very last story because I thought, okay, four stories, I really have to pull out all the feminist science fiction for this. So I explored the word slut, which has come into the feminist vocabulary in ways I found quite bizarre. And I had great fun looking at the cosmic significance of the word. So I have no thematic unity. I can't write more than one story about that. But I think it's wonderful to have had that chance that other people have taken to do the thematic unity bit.
Yes, Lucy.
Oh, well, I have to say that I have no thematic linking. I'd just like the opportunity, because I work in different areas, to sum up all my most of my different interests in one collection. So there was a crime story which was shortlisted for the Ned Kelly Awards, so I could fit that in. There was this erotica story which had been hanging around after it failed to make collection of erotica that I shall not name the publisher of. And then there was a story about ancient Babylon, and which is a kind of romance about, but it's also about the history of chemistry. And the first chemist, who was a woman called Taputi, a perfumier. So it was an opportunity to really show what I could do in a small compass. And the final story, Thief of Lives, is either a vampire story or either a realistic literary story. And so I wanted to write it as if it could be read either way. So that was me just trying what I could and having no thematic integrity whatsoever.
Well, we haven't heard from Kirsten or Ms. Biancotti. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, yes.
Hey, I keep forgetting I'm not a co-host of this one, so I've been really polite and shutting up.
No, you're looking really good with the mics on, so the ear thingies. What?
Anyway.
This is not right on the critic, you sure? Yeah, okay, I'll shut up now.
There'll be edits. My collection, when Elisa invited me to submit to it, I didn't have four stories. I had a difficult novella which had been hanging around my hard drive in various forms for 18 months, I think. And it was difficult because I thought it was broken, and also because it was a novella, which is notoriously hard to sell, although in the last 12 months that seems to have changed market-wise. So I had that, and I had another story, and then I wrote a third one and sent them to her and said, I promise I can get you a fourth one, but here's the three I have. And she really, really liked them. And that was great. So I'm finishing the fourth one for her now, and it's challenging because it's so horrible. I really am not liking writing it at all. It's just nasty and dreadful, and I promise I'll get it finished.
You sure those aren't the thoughts you want to keep in your head and not tell the publisher who's just sitting and the editor sitting just over there?
I know it's going to be a good story. It's just disgusting.
What, gory disgusting?
No, see, I don't find gory disgusting. I find it, like, sometimes disturbing, sometimes amusing, depending how it's written. But this is make your skin crawl kind of... I aspire to Margot Lanigan kind of disgusting. I don't think it's going to get there, but one day I aspire to that kind of tender morsels, just skin crawling ick.
Thank you. Deb.
Ian. Hello, Ian.
And I loved Bad Power.
Oh, I love you.
That's good and slightly uncomfortable considering, but Bad Power, we reviewed it on Writer and the Critic.
Yes, you were very flattering.
Yeah, thank you. Bloody absolutely. Because we loved it. Why did you write it, though? Why did you feel this was the right venue to do it, is what I'm really asking.
So I was sort of growing tired with writing short stories and looking for new ways to keep myself interested. And this was before Elisa told me about this project. And so I had it in my head that one of the little games I was going to play with myself next was a short story suite. And so when Elisa came up with this 12 Planets project, one of the things I said was, I've got this idea for a short story suite. It's 5 stories, I said, up front. It's not 4. Would that be a problem? And I was told no, there was no rule. So I went ahead and wrote these 5 interlinked short stories. And I wrote them in a different way, I guess, for this project, because by then I knew they'd all be appearing together instead of having to be standalones that I would try and sell separately, which meant that a whole bunch of narrative arcs I hadn't ever anticipated ended up becoming clear to me as I was writing them. And then, as you quietly said to me just a little minute ago, I have all these unanswered questions in the book now because I've opened up these arcs, which weren't intended initially. So now I feel an obligation to somehow close those arcs again. In some way.
And I hope you do it speedily. Thank you.
I love you, Ian.
Yeah.
Just bouncing off what Deb just said, I think I don't know about the other authors who've written the collections which aren't interlinked stories. I mean, Deb's was, Tansy's was to a certain extent, Sue Isles obviously was. But having, like, the three stories I have and the one I'm writing are not interlinked and not related, except perhaps, I think, by tone. But it was really interesting to go and look at the three that I had written and look at them at how they'd work together and realise that there's certain names I like, apparently, so I've got to change. I really like four-letter names for boys that start with J, like Joel and Josh. And so having the stories together, I've suddenly got to change some names and some things like that, because now there's repetition, completely unintended. So it's that's actually been a little bit of a challenge. I've got to tweak some things in the stories.
Yes, Tansy.
I just wanted to say that with my collection, mine wasn't originally supposed to be as interlinked as it was. I wanted it to be – I had the title and I wanted it to be stories that used my love of Roman history. But I actually had 4 stories, one of which I'd already written and had been sitting there for ages and was one of those weird, difficult stories that I loved and nobody else did. And, yeah, so I had 4 stories and I sent them to Elisa and she rejected 2 of them and said, those aren't good enough, and that included the previously written one. She said, but these other 2 you have, there was one which is the Agrippina story, which is set in ancient Rome and it's about an alternate secret history of the family of the Caesars. And there's the story which is the Patrician, which is set in near future of that same universe. So the universe of the first book, it's about basically what happens 2,000 years later as a follow-up. And those 2 stories are very linked. And she's like, no, those are the 2 key stories. And so then I ended up throwing everything away and, well, the other 2 stories away, and had to write 2 more stories set in that universe. And that ended up feeling really right. So it ended up being a lot more connected. But those other 2 stories would never have got written if it hadn't been for Elisa basically being ruthless at me and telling me I could do better. So she's really quite mean.
I was going to ask a very general question about how it was working with Elisa, but I think that that sums it up quite, unless any of you have got other war stories or wounds as a result of the process. But
A good editor is a pernickety editor.
Okay, and Elisa is pernickety? Is that what we... Yeah.
There was a certain amount of pernicketiness. And Elisa and Tansy worked together to edit my stuff, and I have nothing but praise. I found it a really positive, rewarding experience, and I hadn't, more recently than that, had that. Partly it helped restore my confidence, and, you know, this year I've got a writing career again. I'm really excited about that too because I haven't had one for a couple of years.
Well, that's great. I can't escape the fact that I think the 4 books that had been published prior to the award season opening up have all appeared on ballots somewhere or else, you know, have been recommended here, there and everywhere. That's a pretty good strike rate for a series of books, I would say. So for you, the other 8, you know, you've got a lot to live up to. I'm going to ask the gender question because, you know, I'm Mr. 101 here. I know what you said before, Elisa, and this is not necessarily directed to you, but I know what you said before, that you wanted to allow these voices to come out. And I know we don't all write books and stuff just to be on awards ballots, but one of the issues is that there has always been, not necessarily just Australia, but worldwide, this the feeling that that men have appeared more on awards than females, women have, sorry. Is a series like this, and I know it's not the primary aim, but is a series like this a way of shouting out and saying you can't ignore us? There is talented women out here. They write great stuff. And you can't pretend that we don't exist.
I think that's a really interesting question. When we started on the journey, there was a lot of conversations about how women weren't making awards lists and here in Australia. And one of the responses to that is that women aren't published enough to make awards lists. So perhaps if you put forward a lot of new short stories, would we make lists? And that seems like a to B kind of progression. But I think what you've just heard is that by creating this project, we created a lot of works that wouldn't otherwise have been written, or that works that wouldn't otherwise have been published because they're the wrong length or they're the wrong kind of story or whatever. So suddenly you say, here, write whatever you want and let's see what happens. And when you approach people and ask them to write work, see what happens, you get a different result. So, yes, more women got published, but also different kinds of work got published too.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because there's such a freedom in... I mean, I my first story, I pitched to Elisa at, I think it was Worldcon. You just accepted it, and I came up and said, okay, so this, the fourth story is going to be this, and I gave her kind of a one-line thing, and she went, ew, yeah, write that. And but that was it. It's not like, you know, write a synopsis, do all that. Like, it's that's your basic premise. It sounds really interesting. Go and write it. So there's a freedom to know that I can write this story at the novella length it's going to need, because it's not going to be a 5,000-word story idea. I know that it has a home, and unless I monumentally screw up, it has a home. And there's a freedom there. I think that's what a lot of us have echoed, that you know, being given this home in advance and say, look, I trust you, I trust the way you write, build me something, is a luxury you don't often get.
Tansy?
Just want to say as well, something about the 4-story collection, or in Deb's case, the 5-story collection. There's something about that as well. It's a freedom to it, because like a lot of people have said, you can choose whatever length you like. You can have a novella and a couple of really short stories, and that's really fun. But the thing about the 4-story collection is there's nowhere to hide. It's not like a whole collection where you could say, put on all your work or all the work you think is your best. It's 4 stories, and you know that, like, you can't afford for any of them to be padding. And there's something about that freedom and the horrible amount of trust, really, that Elisa was putting in us, that it really encourages you to pull your best work out of your brain, to do something more experimental, to do something different, to make a statement about your career as a writer, or something to justify having the trust in the collection, but also 4 stories, and they've all got to be stories that you're proud of, because there's not enough there to be able to tuck in the ones that aren't, you know, maybe aren't the showstoppers. They've all got to be, for your own point of view, work that you're just so proud of.
This is making me terrified in retrospect.
Are you saying you don't have, Margot, that they're not all showstoppers?
That was not the question I was asking myself when I sent them off, I have to say.
Okay.
Well, you've got to realise, Margot, that as each new 12 planet comes out, those of us who are in the second half get more and more terrified about our books.
Yes, Lucy.
I'd like to make a point about awards and the spec fix scene, and that the short story is a form which doesn't get a lot of airplay in other genres. There's only one Australian crime short fiction award, and that's part of the Ned Kelly's. There's in the sort of the mainstream literary, you might get picked for the year's best, and that's only one year's best collection. There is, I think, the Steel Rod Award, which is for a collection of short stories, but there's no space for short story collections but in and short story awards. So if you are a short story writer, a very good place is to work in spec fic, because not only is there the interest in short forms, there's the editorial work going, the anthologies, the markets, and then you can sort of the Aurealis, the Dittmar, Julius Vogel Award, New Zealand, then the international awards is there. There's a lot of scope for the short story, and you know this is pretty much a golden age for short fiction writers in the spec fic area. And let's go for it. Let's enjoy it.
But is it also potentially a golden age, and I'm looking to people on the left side of the room now to answer this possibly, a golden age for female writers in terms of short fiction and longer works? I mean, I know you don't know, awards ballot doesn't mean everything, but to just get that recognition.
I'm just going to provide an anecdote, I think, to answer that. I was at a symposium with a Melbourne writer called Meg Mundell earlier this year, Lucy. When was that? Yeah. And she was talking about her book, Black Glass, and it sounded really interesting. And I talked to her later about it, and I was like, I need to read this book. It sounds really great. And as with so many of these things, it was something I absolutely intended to do. I wasn't just being nice to her, but it was not at a venue where they were selling the book, so I couldn't just get it there and then. And it just completely slipped my mind. And now it has just recently shown up on Dittmar and Cronus Awards lists that will be given out at the convention this weekend. And I was like, yes, that's right, that book. I wanted that book. So I went to the dealer's room and I bought it. And if it hadn't shown up on awards lists, I mean, that's not why I bought it, but it was just that reminder that, yes, this book that I'd heard about, I really do need to get it. And I'm sure that that's – winning awards is good, but I think the shortlists and the ballots are just as important, because it's just that extra visibility, that extra beat that is going to nudge people, just to remind them that this, yes, this is a book they've heard a lot about. It's an extra note.
I'm still going back to the left side of the room here. Not necessarily on that question, unless, Karen, you had an answer that...
Well, not so much on the female thing, but on the award thing, and just the building of name recognition, I think, is really important as well. So that when people meet you or they see something that you've written, they say, oh, yeah, I've heard of you. And even if they actually can't really remember where they've heard of you, you know, the name does start to become familiar. And I do it as well. You know, I'll buy an anthology, or look at an anthology at least, if I recognise the names in there and know that I've seen them on award shortlists, especially, you know, any of the shortlists that you have great respect for.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that the Dittmars and Aurealis are recognising the female. Oh, I keep going back. I know to the female talent in Australia. I mean, it's and this sort of project is what's helping facilitate that. God, facilitate is such a public service word. I apologise. I wanted to go back on something that Tansy had said about showstoppers in the collections. For those who are just written, and we heard what Margot had to say about being nervous. Karen, 4 showstoppers? Can we expect that?
Well, I think so. I felt they were when I was writing them, and with the editing that we did, I think we got to that stage. Certainly the last one.
Okay. Oh, well, all right. Aunt Rosaline, what do you think about the hiding? You can't hide a story.
No, you can't hide. The story that caused me most grief, and still is, about the secret lives of books, is one that I think I'll keep revisiting until the very last gasp. But, yes, I did have that sense of, not hiding. And even though each story is very different, my collection is perhaps possibly more like Lucy's in its disparity. That's okay. I don't mind. Yeah. Happy about that.
Deb, how nervous do you feel at the moment? No, I don't. I keep picking on you, Ms. Deb Kalin, about this.
I'm absolutely terrified. Absolutely, completely terrified. but it's not just listening to these people talk about showstoppers. I've written one story for Alyssa, which is subbed, and then I'm working on my second story. It's called The Briskwater Mare. I've written 40,000 words and thrown them all away. That's 4 false starts, complete false starts of this story, because they're not good enough. And I'm not finding what I need to give Alyssa. And it's partly this freedom that she offers. I remember pitching these stories to her and basically was like, just as long as the tone's like the first one, I don't care what you do. And that's amazing. That's cool. And how terrifying that that scope is, really. And you don't hide it. She puts it all back on the author to live up to the best you can be.
I can't tell you how grateful I am that I actually submitted quite early, because I wasn't thinking showstoppers. I was thinking, what's fun? So, you know, what's fun? I'll do the best I possibly can, and I'll do that.
I don't think you should be scared, and I think it should be what's fun, and I think it should be whatever it is that you want to write, and without the pressure of you have to win an award, Ian. Don't break the rest
of
the team.
I didn't actually say those words. I didn't
break my team.
I think I qualified it quite a lot, actually.
But I think the point was to say, I love what you do. Go and do what it is that you do, and that it's my job to check if it's not a showstopper, and I'll tell you then.
No, I just want to say that's exactly my experience. Like, I had a ball writing my stories, but I knew I wanted them to be the best possible stories I could get you. But we had the freedom to absolutely go there. We didn't have to bulk. We didn't have to restrain ourselves. We could just write these damn stories the way we wanted to write them. And you don't always get that chance, which I mean, and it probably does bring out the best in you.
I would just like to add, like, because I'd been watching 12th Planet Press for a while, and said my writing had just gone into quite severe doldrums at that point. And I'd already been thinking for a year, one day I'm going to be good enough and I will send something to Elisa. One day I'm going to try my hand at 12th Planet Press. And then Elisa emailed me. It's like, oh, my God, like, I don't think I breathed for 10 minutes after that. I had quite a spectacular little panic attack. But the sheer fact that she asked me to submit, and I was there at that point thinking, well, I submit, I may not be good enough, but I've been asked to try. And actually that was enormously encouraging for me. I feel a bit teary right now. Thank you, Elisa. I love you. Don't love Ian, but I do love you.
What?
I like you. You're fine.
Oh, thanks.
Happily married. No. Not really, you know, don't need a spare.
No. Well, then Jules is happy that you said that.
Hurrah.
The one thing we can easily forget in all this, talking about writing, is the wonderful covers on each of the books. And I want to know, Elisa, and please, everyone else can join in, What has inspired each cover, and have you guys, authors, been involved, and et cetera, et cetera? Because they are gorgeous.
Well, just
and Amanda's work. It's
just,
Amanda.
Just like I said to the writers, I said to Amanda, go and do what it is that you do. I don't want to stand in the way of the talent. Just do it and bring it back. And so Amanda went away and conceived of what they are, and what they are is a series of inanimate objects on books that reflect either the tone or something significant in each book.
Did any of you? Oh, yeah, Tansy, yep.
Just to say, because I think I'm the earliest chronological book here, because Sue isn't here. The process I went through with Amanda, she came to me and said, there's going to be an object on the cover and there's going to be a texture. And I'm like, that's kind of vague. And she said, no, this is the thing. And so I talked to her about it. I had seen the Nightsiders cover, which is very, very lovely, and I did ask if I could have purple, not just because I like the colour, but because it is a symbolically significant colour to the ancient Romans, so it was quite appropriate. And we ended up, the texture that she uses is, or the object is a sword, because a Roman gladius is actually a quite an iconic object in three of the key stories in the collection. And the texture was actually, we talked it over and tried a few different things, and we ended up deciding on the idea of a coin that she would use, and it would show up very lightly, but a Roman coin. Now, I've studied Roman coins, and there was this one particular one which I said, well, if we're going to talk about Roman coins, this one is my favourite. It is the coin I geek out about because this is the coin which has Caligula's three sisters, which is a very, very rare thing to have women on coins at all, but particularly Caligula's three sisters, who feature in the first story in the book. And I always like the fact that they're standing there. And yes, you could say they're standing there like the three graces or like goddesses, which is kind of true. I always thought they looked a bit like Charlie's Angels. And actually the story is about how the women of the Julian family are all basically superheroes. So to have that coin there, which meant so much to me emotionally, but also was thematically important to the book. And it was just one of the things I suggested to Amanda, and she just went away and came back with a cover that just looked so good. but also just means so much to me. It just, yeah, it was just lovely. And it's been so nice seeing the series grow and the covers, because the books look so pretty together. Mm-hmm. So every time a new book is added, it's like, you know, a new child has been added to the family and it's another pretty one.
Anyone else about their covers? Debbie and Cotty, you weren't...
Ian.
No, you can't keep saying that. It's not an answer to every question. I mean, I don't mind it, but it's just not... Did you have much of a say in yours?
Yeah, Amanda sent two interpretations of the cover initially. I had to write her some story blurbs, so she had an idea of the tone and what possible objects would be relevant. And she came back with two interpretations, which were both pretty good, and I was trying not to be a control freak, because as Elisa will know, I was a control freak for my first 12 Planets book cover a lot. And so I kind of went back and said, I like this about this one, I like that about that one, and then I was very hands-off and professional. And then she provoked me by sending me a third cover that was obviously insincere.
What does that even mean?
It was wrong, and she must have known that was wrong. And so then I really stuck my finger in and swirled it around and said, well, obviously if you did this, it'd be better. And she ignored all of that and came up with a brilliant one. So cover number three was obviously her giving me the bird. It's obvious.
Margot?
Yeah, well, she provoked me straight up. Oh. No, she sent me a design which sort of was... It was sort of like a sketch for a design, really. And I said, really? It's a kind of like a sketch for a design. It's not really, nothing's quite formed on it yet. It was a round tabletop with a, you couldn't quite tell whether it was a blank computer screen or an empty photo frame. It was quite a bit too deep to be a photo frame. It wasn't quite clear what it was. So I said, would you try again, please, dear Amanda? And she came up, and the texture behind it, which is this kind of 70s wallpaper almost, this hexagonal green thing, I was fine with that. I was happy with that. But just the image in front wasn't actually saying anything quite enough, whereas now this one, this Victorian curly Duchess dresser with the blank mirror is much more evocative of particularly the first story in the book.
Lucy.
I like the way we're all colour-coded, and Tansy's purple. I'm cerulean. I have to say I was an absolute bitch about this cover. I've now worked up a small team of advisors to whom I show covers to. And so they said nup to the first one, they said nup to the second one, and we eventually thrashed it out and we got a design, and it's a perfume bottle, which is the theme of alchemy.
And Narelle, were you also an absolute bitch about the covers? No,
I'm pretty sure I just loved mine from the start. One of the things I like about all the covers is that, you know, I'm not an artist, I can't draw, and if I could think of ideas for covers, I would suggest them, but I have no idea. But when I get a cover, I love seeing what I can interpret from that. And I love the question that each of the covers ask, or the multiple questions. So on mine I have an armchair, which appears to have teeth, and cobwebs that appear to be made out of wool. And so and with a title like Showtime, and I go to the theatre, right, so I'm looking at this empty armchair. And with that title, I'm immediately thinking, I'm hoping everybody else is thinking the same questions as me. Are we waiting for the audience? Has the audience gone? Are the teethy chairs the audience? What were the granny blanket cobwebs? But for me, it was really evocative of a whole bunch of different elements of different stories throughout that, of this pensive waiting. You've got this moment before the lights come up or the lights come down, or you're waiting for something to happen. And there's just this chair, and it's got multiple meanings, and there's all this potential. And so there's all these questions you ask when you look at that cover. And I think with all of these covers, and one of the beauties of Amanda's design is across it, you have question after question after question that's raised, which I'm really hoping people look at those covers and go, wonder what the answer is, and get the books, because they can find out the answer in a couple of hours. They're not big books. You can read them very quickly. And I think there's this little... And I was just mentioning the jelly bean colour across your bookshelf. You just want to pick that shit up. that's beautiful. And they ask you questions and you're not even sure what the question is, because there's multiple questions there. So I adored it from the start.
And Karen, you've got a cover
Amanda
too,
loves
you?
Me.
Yes, I have a cover. I don't think we had any arguments about mine. I was very clear about my texture. That was my most important thing because, again, back to the travelling through the country when we came back, looking at lots of road maps, and it just struck me how much a road map looks like blood veins, which looks like also the veins of a leaf as well. And we'd stop and have picnics and we'd be looking at the leaves and I'd be looking, you know, just thinking about these connections and how so many things, the networks and how things are connected as well. So I knew very much that I wanted that sort of veiny background, and I also wanted red, which may have caused trouble. I'm not sure if I bagged red before other people wanted it.
I'm learning a lot out of this as to who never to do covers for if I was artistically minded, which I'm not. So I suppose, okay, so the series will continue on. We've got another 5 more books to come out. Will they all be out by the end of this year? No.
End of next year.
End of next year, okay. So then what's after that? Do we go 12th Planet novels?
That's a good question, and it's one that we're currently asking, and there's some ideas that we're throwing around.
No, but anyone thinking where, you know, how you can move this forward? Because, I mean, it shouldn't be a full stop at the end of this project. There should be.
I really want a bad power novel. I don't know about everybody else.
Woo! Yeah. Are there any final thoughts? Because unless there was anything specific you wanted to discuss that I've missed out on because, you know, I haven't covered the whole world. So, okay, yes. Elisa. Please, let's talk about the new imprint.
We announced this weekend that we're starting a new imprint on. It's going to be a crime imprint, which will launch with our first novel called A Trifle Dead by Livia Day. It is a fun, young, cosy set in Hobart, and I recommend not being on a diet when you read that book because you will crave food all the time. And starting to think about moving into crime as well as spec fix. So what does that mean? That means a lot more work in a completely different genre for me.
Thankfully you don't have a full-time job or anything, or getting married this year, or any of those other things that might pop along to, yeah, you know, keep you occupied.
It's all good.
So Livia Day, huh?
Is that a question?
Yes. That was the huh bit.
Hello, Ian.
Hi, Tansy. Would you know of this? Apparently lives in Hobart because I read about the author.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I did ask Kirsten because she seems to know stuff that I don't know. I said, who's Livia Day? I've never heard of Livia Day. And Kirsten said, ah. She gave me one of those significant faces. She, yeah.
Okay. I did not laugh like that.
Wasn't exactly. Oh, look, I'm slightly paraphrasing for effect because, you know, I can't, you know, instill the. Yes, okay. So, yeah, Livia Day. Who is that, Tansy?
That would be me.
Oh, wow. What a revelation.
There you go. So you get your opportunity to ask again the question that you asked me earlier today that I managed to avoid asking.
Yes, and I bailed you up in a corridor. It was really quite rude, actually, because I spat it out with spit. Why the, I suppose, pseudonym?
Well, I think because I've been spent a long time building a science fiction and fantasy brand. I like to use the inverted commas. But, you know, I've been building up that career, and the idea of doing something completely different, I don't know. I like the idea of – I see the way different authors have used pen names differently. Like some people do have it as a complete secret. There are some people out there who write under more than one name and they don't tell anybody. And I see quite a few writers, particularly – writers who write, say, for adults and then for children, and they do different variations of their name. I think it is important to try and draw a line somewhere rather than being that author that does everything. I mean, I admire a lot of those, that author that does everything, but I liked the idea of trying again with crime in particular and having it being something where librarians and people can look at it as a crime author and a crime book without coming to it with preconceptions of that person who mostly writes fantasy but is now dabbling in another genre or anything like that. And this is a book that I love and has been sort of around for a while. I've written it, had problems with it, come back. But I always wanted to write something set in Hobart that was fun, because there's something about Hobart and Tasmania in particular that tends to inspire very grim literature. It's not just the weather. This was a book that actually, a very early draft of this book, it's been in my head and in my life on and off for a long time. It actually lost me an agent once because she said I wasn't writing enough about grim sense of cold, ghosts of convicts, all this sort of stuff that was to her Hobart. And I'm like, well, no, I was in my 20s. I'm like, Hobart's kind of a fun place. We have cafes and it's quite cool, really.
And pretty.
Yeah, and pretty. So I wanted, it was that sort of chick lit crime. It's fun. There are murders, but, you know, and there's food. And it's an Elisa kind of book. And I thought it was, you know, she's wanted it for a while. She's been trying to prize it off me for quite a while.
Elisa, did you create an entire imprint just so you could publish this book?
I'm not saying that's exactly what I did, no.
But you're not denying it. Okay. Now, I would like everyone to have one final word before we finish off. So, look, let's go the other way. So I won't start with you, Karen. Lucy, just any other thoughts, projects you're working on? It can be anything. You can rant,
pollute, well,
if you want to.
I commend Elisa in moving into crime. They share some of the same readership. They're both... Crime and spec fic are both very strongly narrative-based, and it's an entirely new world to conquer, to which I say to Elisa, next stop, BoucherCon.
Elisa, you also should have a final word.
Just want to thank these fantastic writers for writing me really awesome stuff to publish.
Oh, that's very nice.
I have nothing else to say, which will shock many who know me. But no, it's been wonderful to be part of this and to be sitting here with all these incredible writers. I just feel really, really privileged to be here with you. Thank you.
I'm just kind of excited to have brought the word Roman punk into the speculative fiction vocabulary because that was what we needed, another punk.
Yes. Has anyone used it, by the way?
Not just me.
Okay. We'll see what we can do about that.
You're a genre of one at the moment. I'm just fascinated and delighted to watch 12th Planet Press grow. It's been 5 years and it's gone from this little baby press to this press that's like... No, it has. Like this little baby press that... Because we get a lot of them. We get presses that pop up and they publish a book and maybe they'll publish a second one and then they just quietly go away because it's hard. It's hard work to run... A press.
Was Dirk's book the first one?
No, 2012.
Oh, yeah, 2012, of course, yeah. Which was a great collection.
So it's just wonderful to watch 12th Planet Press just grow and grow and grow, and it's really exciting. It's got an imprint. It's like you're having children now.
I know.
Margot, please.
I'm just very pleased to be sort of part of the 12th Planet set. And it was a really straightforward, painless editorial and publication process for which I'm very grateful, and I'm thrilled to have been given the opportunity to write a set of freewheeling stories. It is, I was going to say before, it is a lot more straightforward and easy if somebody says, write me a story about a witch, but it's a new and exciting thing to be given complete freedom over four stories to have an extended play.
I'm just absolutely thrilled to join the 12th Planet series and to be given this opportunity to work on stories that are very dear to myself personally and that are very difficult subject matter that really probably wouldn't be publishable by any other market. So thanks to Elisa for that.
I love you, Ian.
If you say it enough, you know what happens.
It's hard to have an afterword because I kind of feel like my experience in the 12 Planets series has been a beginning for me. I mean, it's been such an exciting discovery to just focus in on a set of stories and reveal that there's even more to it. So I'm looking forward to doing more stuff. So I don't have a final word. I just have let's go, let's go.
Very nice.
Oh, I'm very thrilled to be part of the series because... I have not written fiction for 6 years and I've come back and I've just been able to do it again. So that's a very nice experience. So thank you.
Well, I'm thanking you too for making Rosaline Love write more stories because I adore her.
Oh, okay.
That's my final word. That's a good way to say it. I adore Rosaline Love.
Did you want to write a reply? No, okay.
I also wanted to thank Embiggen Books for hosting us today and for having such a gorgeous bookstore because... I love bookstores like this and should come down and ask for my books here because they're here.
I would like to thank all the panellists. Thank you very much for attending and saying wonderful answers to my long-winded questions. I'd like to thank Embiggen Books for hosting this, which was very nice of them. And I'd like to thank our audience for coming along in the wet, rainy Melbourne weather and hearing what we all have to say. So thank you. And thank you to 12th Planet Books. And that is all. Good
night.
Thank
you, Ian, for hosting.
Oh, no problems.